You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound to get you amped up today. It's the sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thanks for joining us on the Sunday edition of the Roto Experts. I'm Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning, and we'll be here for the next 2 hours talking fantasy sports with you. We're going to switch it up today. We're going to talk football first and spend the second hour talking baseball. We can recap some of last night's games, but more importantly, we're going to be talking with Roger Mooney from the Tampa Bay Times. We'll talk a little bit about the Rays. I've been talking to Roger for a couple of years on these shows. And we'll do some all-star apologies, George, because, listen, nobody's perfect, and we are part of that those ranks. So we'll apologize to those players and maybe even to Mike Cardano for maybe underestimating what they could do this season.
No, I'm not going to apologize to Mike Cardano. It's okay. Not going to happen. What place is he in that league?
I don't know. I've reached out to him to see if we can have him on this morning and find out exactly where he is. At last check, which was admittedly over a month ago, he was doing pretty well. He was in like the top three. So
yeah, he was in third. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see where he is right now. But that being said, we'll apologize to some other players that maybe we doubted this All-Star season. Talk a little bit about the All-Star game and any positives that might come out of it, any old memories that you and I might have had when the All-Star game actually mattered. But
are you going to watch the All-Star game?
Yeah, I will. I always do. I can't say
you're
going to
watch it and pay attention and care.
Care,
I'm not saying
no.
I don't want to say it's going to be on the background. You're going to be playing with the kids, because I'll at least do that, sure.
No, I'll be a little bit more invested than that. A little bit more invested than that. I'm not going to watch with bated breath like I did when I was a kid, but I will watch the game. It's still a part of my childhood and something that I can't say that I've watched every single All-Star game, but I usually will tune in. The unfortunate part of that is that the intros have become interminable. It's gotten to the point where, hey, coverage starts at 7, and we'll throw first pitch at 8:50. It's like, guys, let's just introduce everybody and play. Like, I get it. It's already a big pomp and circumstance. Let's not draw it out.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't watched the intros in forever. The game itself has taken the fact that so many games are on TV nowadays. I mean, the package, you have ESPN, you know, all the games on TNT, and all the you can watch all these players anyway.
You and I couldn't watch Dave Parker. You and I couldn't watch Dave Parker back in the day. And then he plays in the All-Star game, and he'd throw 300-foot missiles towards third base or home, and then you were like, wow, Dave Parker's something else. Like, that was cool. But you're right. Now I see everybody. We talk about everybody every Saturday and Sunday, and we see them. So it's different. But, maybe we'll also talk about Clint Frazier's Hall of Fame career, how it's gotten off to a good start here this week with the walk-off, baby. Ginger power. I'm in full support of Clint Frazier. So we're going to talk about Todd Gurley when we come back. We're going to talk about Mike Gillisley a little bit more because I got into a Twitter tiff about him yesterday. So always love those. Mike and George back after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Just a little swing music. I'm not going to make any references like I made yesterday to confuse George, but a little swing music here to get started on Sunday. And George freaked me out during the break because we are both in Scott Fishbowl, so we'll be drafting tomorrow. George and I both have the same three drafts tomorrow. We're in the same Dynasty League. That's going to be a slow draft. It's rookies only. Then we have the Scott Fishbowl, and we also have a mock draft that we're doing with Roto Experts staff. We're going to be doing a standard draft. We'll publish results there on Twitter to give you folks a idea of, you know, how players are trending right now and who's a fan of which player, you know, like, Corey. I can guarantee Corey will have some players, and Scott will have Eddie Lacy, and George and I will have our favorites. But, again, we'll publish those. So But George freaked me out about the Scott Fish Bowl. You said there's rules changes from last year. I guess they switch it up each and every year. This is my first year doing Scott Fish Bowl. I know you've done it for a number of years, yes?
Yeah, I've done it since, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. However long it's been going, I've been in it. It's a fun. I like the setup. It is it's a super flex league, so you can start two quarterbacks. It's 6 points for a touchdown pass, so it overemphasizes the quarterback. I have the third pick in my draft tomorrow. Now, Mike and I are drafting tomorrow, but we're not in the same we're not in the same division, so we're not drafting at the same time or same players. I have the third overall pick, Mike, and I've already set it up. I'll be taking a quarterback. It doesn't matter who it is. I've already set it up. I'm taking a quarterback. There's no way I'm not going to take a quarterback and have my first quarterback be the 22nd overall. If it was the fourth, if it was 4 points for a touchdown pass, I might go with an Ezekiel Elliott. But the fact that it's not 6 points for a touchdown pass plus, I've been actually one of those guys who's been on board and saying it for months now that I think Elliott does get suspended eventually, or I'm worried about him getting suspended, so I'm staying away from him here. I'll go, in my mind, the safer route, and I hope it's Aaron Rodgers.
So I picked ninth. To give you folks a sense of some of the other experts in here, I have Mike Clay from ESPN is in my division. Although I think Mike Clay has done a bunch of these, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's in yours too, George. Dynasty League Football, Jeremy Funk. I got myself, Number Fire, Michael Comerford. So we have some other experts in here. Purple Report, Josh Mensch. I'm not familiar with him exactly, but clearly there's a lot of different experts in here. And I picked ninth, George. So at that point, I'll probably want to go quarterback. But I'll see how big the run is and see what kind of
it may not be as big as you think. I mean, yeah. I've played Scott Fish Bowls where quarterbacks fly up the board, and I played in others where they don't. People don't wait on it. You never know what people are going to do here. Now, there is a rule change here. And since we're talking about it, I can't leave it as a surprise for you anymore. This is not a PPR league. However, it's also not a standard league. This is a league where I think eventually more leagues are going to go to this. It's something people have been complaining about a lot. When it comes to a PPR league, Mike, what do people complain about?
Overemphasizes the wide receiver position.
Slightly, but they complain that why are we rewarding a point for a catch when that catch can be meaningless? It could go for negative yards. Whatever, a halfback screen or a wide receiver screen go for negative 3 yards, but you're still rewarding a point for that catch. So this is not a PPR. You do not get a point for a catch here. You get a point per first down. Which I think is fantastic.
That.
I love it too.
Yeah. I'm looking at it now. Rushing first downs and receiving first downs, 1 point each. So there you go. So you know who's that? You know, it gets a lot of value out of there when you're thinking wide receivers and guys that have fallen back a little bit and probably pushes him back up a little bit more. Somebody like Julian Edelman, who's like first down machine. You know, first down after first down after first down. Maybe even
most catches go for first downs for wide receivers. So it actually helps wide receivers, hurts running backs. Because a lot of their catches don't go for first downs.
This is true. But rushing first downs count here, too. So we'll see.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I like it, too. I like it, too. We'll see. We're going to have to see how that adjusts strategy. But, you know, it'll help certain players push up the rankings a little bit. Kind of like thinking like a Pierre Garçon is normally good with that. But we'll see how efficient the Niners' offense is.
Tight ends get an extra bump, by the way.
Where's that?
1.5. It's right below it.
Look at that. That's this is pretty cool. All right, good. I'm glad we talked about it.
There you go, kids. That's why you check your rules.
Yeah, I had planned on doing that, but George was like laughing at me this morning that I hadn't done it because there's some interesting rule changes. But we talk about this stuff because I think it is indicative of the types of rule changes you can do to your league. I was with some guys yesterday at a barbecue. As one does during the summer, and they're in my home league. Two of these guys are in the home league, and we were talking about, actually three of them, we're talking about potential rule changes. And there's some support to move to a super flex or a 2QB league. Some guys are saying, if we're going to do it, just go all the way to 2QBs. I don't have to do that, but there's absolute support for getting rid of the kickers. I think that's actually going to happen. My goal is really just to get rid of the kickers and add another flex. If we don't go super flex, I'm okay with it. The problem is that it is a keeper league, and how do you, George, since we're talking about it, how would you address that? Like, for instance, last year, I knew that was going to be my last year of Blake Bortles because there's a three-round penalty. It moves up each year, and Bortles this year would be like, I don't know, like a sixth-round pick, so I wasn't going to keep him. But so I drafted Matt Ryan last year in the 14th round, so I'll have him in the 11th this year, which, you know, that's slotted in. I'm good to go. I'm just going to keep Matt Ryan. That's my quarterback. So if you move to a 2QB league or a Superflex league right away, I'm obviously at a massive advantage for something like that, having snagged a prime quarterback seriously late. So how do you account for that transition, or do you say nobody can keep quarterbacks?
Well, what you'd probably have to do is do it a year ahead of time. And you want to make it fair, you wouldn't start this until next year. You would let everybody know at the draft this year, hey, next year, you know, we're starting a Superflex. And I think it should be a Superflex, not a 2QB league. Yeah. I don't mind 2QB leagues, but what is it, a 12-team league?
It is 12, yes.
Yeah, so that's going to put some teams at a disadvantage. Because as much as quarterback is deep, and I just wrote my chapter for Benny Ricciardi's book is on why you should be a Superflex league. And I can come up with 23 quarterbacks you're okay with, you know, so I understand it's only one short, but there'll be injuries to it. It's going to really, it's going to hurt some teams. The idea of a Superflex is just gives you that extra option. Oh, you don't have a quarterback? You can throw a wide receiver, running back, tight end in there. That's all fine. You won't take a zero, but they won't equal what a quarterback does on a week-to-week basis, on an overall basis. Week-to-week, yeah, you might get a wide receiver that outscores a quarterback. But overall, it'll be the quarterback that wins. So you always do want to start a quarterback there, but at least in Superflex, if your quarterback gets hurt, he underperforms, whatever, you won't get screwed. During bye weeks when there's no quarterbacks left, and this will happen. Remember, if you can do a simple math for you. Every quarterback will be drafted in a Superflex or a two-quarterback league. You know, and 12 times 2, you start in 24. So it's 8 left over. It's 4 teams are left without a third quarterback. So 4 teams will get screwed and take a zero during bye weeks. You know, it's this way if you have a Superflex, they can throw somebody in there. So they're not completely getting screwed here. So I'm on board with that. I'd vote for Superflex in your league, Mike, and I'd make it a year ahead. If anybody's complaining, you know, make it a year ahead of time. Start it next year. If all 12 guys say, hey, fine, we don't care that Blewett's got Ryan. Well, I got this guy as a great keeper, blah, blah, blah. And there are other guys, I'm sure, who have great keepers too. Then fine, you can start it this year. But to make it fair, generally with rule changes like this, it's a year ahead of time.
I completely agree. So this is exactly what I proposed yesterday, and I cited the exact example that you said yesterday. I was like, here's why I don't want to do two QBs, because then it's going to put somebody in a position of having to start Jared Goff or Cody Kessler when they might be able to start a really strong fourth wide receiver or a strong third running back. I don't want to force people to have to play quarterbacks that they really have no interest in. They just have to cover the position. So that was my reasoning for Superflex, and I agree. I as opposed to me having to punt Matt Ryan back into the pool, why don't we just say, you know, it starts next year. So we go this year, we go with the one QB. Blewett wants to keep Ryan in the 8th round next year, which I would do, then he's got to keep him there. But it'll get us towards on the right track. Or you could even say, we're going to do it this year. Next year, nobody can keep QBs. You throw them all back in. I'd be okay with that too, frankly. So it gives people some adjustment time. Well, so this is good. This is good that we got the ball rolling on this types of discussion, different types of scoring leagues. When has Benny's book come out, by the way?
My chapter's finished. I finished it yesterday, so I will hand it in. Now, obviously, Benny's got a lot of work to do. He's got to edit it. He's got to format it and all this other stuff. I would imagine August 1st, but I don't think he has a hard set date yet. Benny is on his way to the All-Star game. If he's not on his way, he'll be there shortly. So we all have to have our chapters in by Wednesday, the day after.
Very nice. All-Star game for Benny. I think he won that in like a DFS contest, right?
He did. Indeed, yeah. He did. Yeah, so he gets to go out there and... I don't know if he gets tickets to the home run derby. I don't know about that, but I hope he does. That's pretty cool.
I did the home run derby at Citi Field. It was, I don't know, 101 degrees. it was interminably long. So if you guys have fun watching it on TV, that's a perfect place for it. Let me just say that. It gets old. It gets old after Cespedes hits his 35th home run into the upper deck. You're good to go. You get the point. So, in any event, as I rain on the parade of Major League Baseball, we'll be back after the break to talk about Todd Gurley finally. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday. Again, baseball in the next hour, the Roger Mooney from the Tampa Bay Times. He's at Roger Mooney 50 on Twitter. But if you want to follow us today, hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And if you want to give us a call, it's 84-FNTSY, 844-843-6879. So I did have a question yesterday, George, a football question from a guy that listens to us all the time. And he goes by the title of Big Ben. And he said the best two value targets for wide receiver and a half-point PPR of this group, Tyreek Hill, Dante Moncrief, Martavis Bryant, Stephon Diggs.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay, so Tyreek Hill, Moncrief, Bryant, stuff. I'm taking Diggs out. I want really very little to do with the Minnesota passing game. Not until Sam Bradford proves to me he's willing to throw the ball deep into the secondary. And that offensive line's not going to get him and anybody else killed. So it's really two out of three for me. Moncrief, killed me last year, Mike. Killed me because that injury he suffered in week two, the shoulder injury, that was pretty devastating.
It was.
That was pretty devastating. Bryant, it's all about the big play. I think where he's going now, it's Bryant. But I think by the time August rolls around, you know, drafts get really serious, people get really back at tuned into it, I think his draft status is moving up. So I'm going Bryant and Moncrief here. I don't trust Hill. I don't trust Alex Smith. I don't trust him being the number one wide receiver there. Now defense is going to be paying attention to him. I don't trust the running game. I don't trust the offense. I really don't. I think Hill's going to make some big plays. No doubt about that. Some of that's going to be on special teams. Generally, we don't get those points when he scores on special teams. So I'm going with Moncrief and Bryant here. And Hill, I think, is also – I don't think there's value there with Hill. I think he's flying up draft boards too high now where there's no value. So I'm going to pass. I don't think I'm going to get a return on investment in Hill.
Yeah, so it's funny. This guy has been asking me questions. He goes – his Twitter handle is Mr. Kraft, M-I-S-T-A-H. But in any event – he's been asking these types of questions recently where all these players are clumped together. So to give you a sense, on Fantasy Pros right now, Tyreek Hill is ranked 27th amongst wide receivers, Martavis Bryant 28th, Dante Moncrief 29th, and Stephon Diggs 31st. So all those guys clumped together, he's trying to get a sense of who has the best value there. I think you're right on Hill. I totally agree. I think he is now getting to the point where he may be exceeding any kind of value pick. I think Martavis Bryant, as much risk as there is, I think he's got to be the biggest upside guy here. We've seen a little bit of it before. I don't think this offense is going to take any steps back, barring injuries. And I think Martavis Bryant is a really good complement to Antonio Brown. Can he stay on the field through injury or lack of suspension? We shall see. But I would think of those four, you're going to extract the most value out of him. And hopefully Dante Moncrief can have a nice bounce back here. So we'll see. Moving on to the topic that I was going to start the show with, but it's good that we got off to some other things because it created some interesting discussions. And that's Todd Gurley. So the story came out yesterday. Yeah, he's loving the off season, and who doesn't love their off season program, right? He's just saying that. NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal noted during minicamp that the Rams are moving Gurley all around the offensive formation. They're in motion in the backfield, outside the hashes, etc. So he was obviously a huge drag on a lot of teams last year, including mine in our staff league. I took Gurley, and I took him basically over David Johnson, and that's my own fault, and I paid the price. My team ended up okay, not great. And if Gurley was any good, I probably would have been one of the better teams. So, this is the offense that ranked 32nd in points scored, 32nd in yards, 32nd in first downs, 32nd in net yards per passing attempt, 31st in yards per attempt rushing at 3.3 yards per attempt. Gurley's was even slightly less than that. So, what do you got with Todd Gurley this year, man? Like, he's a guy with so much talent. I just don't even know how I can bash him in any way, you know. We still have him ranked, according to the experts, he's an RB1. So maybe that's okay. He's just a little bit further back in the RB1 conversation. But give me your thoughts on Todd Gurley.
I don't feel much different about him this year than I did last year. Wasn't touching him last year, and I doubt I'll have him this year. I don't have him as an RB1. Same reasons. The offense is terrible. Once again, when you think of the Rams offense, who are you afraid of? Can the average fan even name a wide receiver or a tight end on the Rams? Anyone? I mean, really, it's you don't even Kenny Britt anymore. Your number one's Robert Woods. All right, good luck there. Good luck to you. Let me know how that works out for you. Defense is going to once again load up to stop Gurley and force Goff to beat them. If he can do that, if that pass game can prove to be something, then Gurley could have a much better season. I'll say it again. This is nothing against Todd Gurley. This is all against that Ram offense. I don't see much of a change here. Not yet. I think it will change. I think they're working at it, but it's not there yet. So I'm not touching Gurley. Like I said, if there's value there and he falls to me, sure. But as a running back one, I think if he's my running back one and it's not a zero running back strategy, which it won't be because he's not going to last that long, I'm probably in trouble. You know, so I'm staying away from here. I think there is some upside here because the talent's there, but I don't trust the offense. No, thank you.
Yeah. Look, I'm not as averse to taking Gurley as you are, but I do think you're going to have to be totally honest with yourself about the questions. If you're expecting a big bounce back year from the Rams, you're overstating it. They can't be worse than they were last year, but that isn't saying anything, frankly. They were the worst offense in the league. As much as people like to use the Jets and the Browns as punchlines, the Rams were the worst offense. And it got worse throughout the season to the point where Gurley himself called them a middle school offense after the Week 14 loss to the Falcons. So I do think that McVay is a beacon of hope, maybe, that he can try to get Goff fixed a little bit. They did make a couple of acquisitions on the offensive line. They drafted another tight end in Gerald Everett in the second round to pair him up with Tyler Higbee. To George's point, the wide receiver depth chart is Robert Woods, Tavon Austin, Cooper Kupp, and the other Mike Thomas, as well as Farrah Cooper, who was a draftee last year. So, you know, adding John Sullivan and Andrew Whitworth, that's 20 years of NFL experience to the offensive line. I think they can only help, but those guys are probably past their all-pro days, and they might just be here for last couple of paychecks. I say that with no disrespect. I think they should get every last dime that they can out of the league. So I think there's just going to still be too many issues with Goff for this offense to be any kind of efficient. Will they be dead last in points and yards allowed? Hopefully not. But they're not going to break into the top half of the league, right?
No, I mean, they're not. It's going to be a bad team. I know, I've actually heard some people predict that the Rams are going to win that division or get a wild card. I don't see that.
No way.
I think the defense is going to be very good. You know, defense is already good. And we talked about yesterday, Wade Phillips, his first season as defensive coordinator, for every team he's been with, he makes the defense even better. So I think that's very good hiring there, Wade Phillips there for defense. But the offense is not there. It's not even close. I mean, it's just not. Plus, you know, you're going to play Seattle twice. You're going to play Arizona twice. The rest of their schedule is not a breeze either. They're going to have some issues here. So I'll be staying away from all their players on offense. I think I do have Robert Woods in that Dynasty League that we're drafting in tomorrow. So I'll have him. And I wouldn't mind grabbing him as maybe a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 in a PPR because someone's got to catch some passes there. We did see Britt have a decent season last year. But I don't think Robert Woods is Kenny Britt either.
You don't blame them for not re-signing Britt, do you? I mean, you got a lot of money. I don't see why a team would spend that kind of money. A team like this would spend that kind of money on Kenny Britt.
No, I don't. Like, he's not the answer there. I understand it's a slow. Listen, you can't fix every position in one offseason. It can't be done. Yeah. So I get that. You know, I might have wanted to keep Britt, and I'm a little surprised that Britt left, only because, all right, Britt's leaving because he doesn't want to go through another disaster season, right? Wants to go play for a contender. Well, he signed with Cleveland. So apparently not. It was about the money. The Rams just didn't want to pay up for whatever reason. Maybe they feel the same as a lot of people do. Kenny Britt, nice guy, but no reason to pay him that kind of money. We get somebody else, Robert Woods, who we also paid a lot of money for. You know, same type of receiver here. So I don't think it matters one way or the other here. They don't have their – I don't know if they have a number two, more or less a number one yet.
Yeah, so they were 4-5 last year, and obviously the wheels came off the wagon, and they lost their last seven. So they finished 4-12 last year. You mentioned that division. What is Arizona going to look like? We know what Seattle sort of is, and we know that the Niners will actually probably be worse than the Rams. So where would you put them? How many wins can you extract from the Rams this year?
Oh, boy. I think you really delve into their schedule there and see if they have winnable games here. They're certainly not going to go you know, winless. I wouldn't say something silly like that. Division's tough. Yeah, you do play the 49ers, so I'll give them at least one win against the Niners, right? I'll be generous there. I would put the over-under at 4.
Interesting. So you think they're going to be really bad?
Again. I think they're going to get 4 wins, apparently.
I don't know. I always feel like a new coach, especially when Wade Phillips is one of them, can give them a little bit of a shot in the arm. But,
still
man, the
score
offense
points.
I know, but they brought in an offensive guy. They should be able to at least fix part of that. I like
play
to
the Jets
more
in Cleveland, Seattle, Jacksonville, Arizona, Giants, Texans, Vikings, Saints. Oh, they may not get the 4.
Really? That's interesting.
I may have to reset this at 3.
That's interesting. I'm looking at it now. Colts, Washington, Niners, Cowboys, Seahawks, Jags. Come on, they can beat the Jags.
It's in Jacksonville. I'm not sure they can.
Yeah,
outside of San Fran, give me a game they're going to win.
I got to be honest.
It's not there.
I got to be honest. I can't.
4's being kind.
Jacksonville's the one, but it's on the road, yeah, as you said. So maybe Leonard Fournette just runs right over them. So anyway, there was a depressing Todd Gurley conversation. Wow. I didn't expect it to go that far south. We'll come back. We'll try and lift up your hopes with Mike Gillisley taking over for LeGarrette Blount this year. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blue and George Kurtz here until 10 o'clock. After that, we got a new schedule today. So it's going to be Tony Cincotta and Matt Modica with Fantasy Football Gold. That's from 10 to 1. So we're going to take you all around the NFL, dive into a lot of different players and situations like we've been doing here with Todd Gurley, and we'll do in a second with Mike Gillisley. Then Van Rag Fantasy Baseball from 1 to 3 with Al Melchior. And then it's the producers with Pete Considori and Kevin Walsh from 3 to 5. So we'll be good to go there. That's the new schedule for Saturdays for now, for Sundays. I'm sorry, for now. It will change again when football season comes around. Apologize for the changing schedules, but it's the nature of our network right now. We're changing some things up, getting some new shows together.
It's football season.
Yeah, it's football season, and hopefully folks are excited about it because you're getting a lot more football content than you were a month ago. We will not ditch baseball. Still part of what we're going to do, but ultimately, that's the deal for now. George and I will still be here every Saturday, through the end of the year, as far as we know. Always subject to change, but for now, I mean, George and I have been on Saturdays since this network started, and we'll continue that way. So, talking about Mike Gillisley, the reason I'm bringing him back up is because yesterday, just on Twitter, Michael Salfino, who you know very well, he's appeared on our networks and on our shows in the past. Michael Salfino was talking about on Twitter, and Matt Modica and I were going back and forth with him, that he thinks Gillisley sort of takes over that LeGarrette Blount role, those clock-killing yards, those goal line red zone scenarios are going to transfer right over to Mike Gillisley. I said, it's an interesting point, but I have a hard time believing the keys to the backfield will just be handed over to Mike Gillisley. But that's what Michael Salfino feels to be the case right now. So do you agree with him or me on this?
I'm probably in between yous. And I know that sounds like hedging. Oh, yeah, we'll make a decision here. I don't think anyone takes over the pure Blount role. Well, this is the guy on short yard. This is the guy on, you know, first, second down, all that. I think it's a mixture. I think I do lean towards it being Gillisley more often than not. Gillisley saw listed at 5'11", 220. So he's a big guy. But 5'11 is also a little big for a running back. Means he, you don't run, if he runs big, he's going to get hammered. You know, he's got to run small. I know that sounds strange. He needs to he doesn't want to present too big a target there, so he won't last the entire season. This is a guy who's not used to touching the ball a ton. You know, so how's that going to change now? You know, only in the pros, last year was just, the most he's ever touched the ball. He rushed it for 101 times. Think about that. That's the most he's had. So how's he going to handle a bigger role this year? And his role will be bigger this year. But I don't think it'll be immense. There are just too many other backs there. Burkhead, White, they're all going to play. Lewis, we've seen Belichick do this before where you just don't know week to week. If I had to bet, Yes, I'm betting on Gillislee. I think he is the guy. I think he is going to be a touchdown guy at the very least. So, yes, I am. I'm interested, Mike. I'll think about drafting him, but the value has to be there for me. I'm not drafting. I don't want him as a running back one. He's a mid-range running back two for me, low-range RB2, and I'm good with that, you know, round five, round six. He's the kind of running back I'd love in a zero running back strategy because I think there's upside there, and I wouldn't mind taking a shot with him. But I don't think he'll have the full LeGarrette Blount role, no, where it's, you know, it's Blount and third down, one of the other guys. I think one of the other guys is going to be involved, too. Maybe it's Burkhead. Maybe it's White again. This, you know, White really certainly a big part of that Super Bowl win for New England. I don't think they're going to forget about him either.
Yeah, I mean, that was completely situational, though, right? Blount, I believe, fumbled, but they were down by 25 points. So they had to start throwing the ball, and White was a part of that. I think it was well documented. White basically had no touchdowns during the year, and then he scored all kinds of points in the Super Bowl in two-point conversions. Right now, Mike Gillislee is 24th, ranked 24th. Amongst experts in standard leagues. So a very end of the RB2 conversation right around Mark Ingram, Tevin Coleman, Bilal Powell, Frank Gore. So those are the guys going around him. The good news for me, George, I actually hung on to Mike Gillislee in our Dynasty League, which we have that draft in tomorrow. I just hung on to him for I think I picked him up at the end of the 2015 season when running back situation was rough. I think somebody dropped him. I was like, oh, let me just take a flyer on that. You know, I ended up cutting some guy that didn't really matter, and here I am. And it just sort of out of nowhere, I'm presented with the potential starting running back for the New England Patriots. So that would be good news for me. What my point of contention really was with Salfino is that he was saying the clock-killing carries are a big part of their offense. But last year, the Pats ranked third in rushing attempts in the league. I think a big part of that is because they were hanging on to leads. Now, they were only rushing at 3.9 yards per attempt. That was 25th in the league. But if you shift just to the year before, the 2015 season, the Patriots ranked 25th in rushing attempts for the offense. So 2015 to 2016 represented a big change. And it's not like they weren't successful in 2015. They went 12-4. And they lost in the conference championship game to the Broncos. Now, granted, they were a lot more efficient last year. They were 14-2. They were covering all kinds of games. They were blowing teams out last year. They just happened to have a very efficient season. Brady was spectacular. But do you think that represents a change in the philosophy? Because Brady had gotten a year older, and they decided they needed to maybe limit the amount of throws he had. Last year, they were 23rd in the league in passing attempts. The year before, they were fifth. So a huge change, really, from 2015 to 2016 in the way that they were playing offense, or at least the pass-to-run distribution.
Yeah, the offensive line wasn't good at times last year as well. And I think they're worried about getting Brady too many hits. Remember the first four games, there was no Tom Brady. He had a suspension for Deflategate. So I think a lot of issues last year. I'm not as worried about it this year. I mean, Tua's first, right off the bat, he plays KC. And he has Houston in week three. So he's going to play two very good defenses pretty much right out of the chute. But there's New Orleans mixed in the middle there, so that'll be fantasy gold. I think they'll be the normal offense here. You know, I really do. This team is stacked. We know that. Now, they also brought in Brandon Cooks. I mean, really, they just reloaded everywhere. You bring in Gillislee's, you want to call him the replacement of Blount? Fine. You can call him that. I don't think he's purely that, but maybe he's 75% that. Cooks should help the deep passing game, right? So safeties are now no longer at the line of scrimmage. They have to back off a little bit. Gronk, remember, he's back. He was out for the last couple of games last year in the playoffs. So that helps as well. I'm not worried about this passing game. I think it'll be dynamic.
Okay. So the additions of Gillislee and Burkhead, those are big analytics favorites. Blount is not so much an analytics favorite. So we'll obviously continue to track that. I think Gillislee is a guy that you're going to see move around draft boards, but he'll probably go pretty early in a lot of drafts because somebody's going to take a shot. Somebody's going to think what Mike Salfino is putting out there. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying I'm couching that a little bit. I've already bet on Mike Gillislee, so I don't need to take too many more bets on him in one of our bigger, more competitive leagues. Mike Gillislee's right in the mix there. But to switch over to the team that he left, we all know about LeSean McCoy, George, and we know that he's going to be RB1 all day for people. He's now ranked top four, which is interesting to me because in recent years, like when he first made the move to Buffalo, they were sort of like, I don't know about McCoy. Like maybe he's on the other side. He had the major injury. Like maybe he's on the other side of his career. But here he is now. And despite the fact that LeSean McCoy is a year older and he's now, what is he now? He's 20, going to be 29 in a couple of days, actually. He's a number four ranked running back. Are you willing to take him in the first round in your drafts?
Probably, yeah. Be at the end of the first round. But yes, certainly in the standard league, no doubt. But yeah, the problem with McCoy is this. How many games? All right, how many games? When's he getting hurt? You know, Matt Modica, by the way, is chiming in on Twitter. And I bring that up because Matt's a Buffalo fan. How many games, Matt? How many games are we going to get out of McCoy? We getting 8, 12? When's he missing those 2 to 3 games? Is it during the playoffs, the fantasy playoffs? Is that when he gets hurt? And he's also the guy you know you're going to get this. He's the screw-you player. Questionable. Oh, he's going to play. Oh, didn't suit up. Or did suit up, didn't play. He's that kind of guy. Yeah, so that there is some worry there, so maybe he should fall into a second round. But either way, he's a running back one, no matter how you look at it. When he plays, he's dynamic. One thing I'll worry about this, you know, under Ryan last year, they gave him the goal line carries. Is that going to happen again? Yeah, so those touchdowns may be limited, so I might worry about that as well. Matt Modica also puts on Twitter, by the way, Brady last year was on pace for 576 attempts. This is what include, obviously, when he's, so that comes out to 36 a game. 37 touchdowns, that's pretty much a touchdown and a quarter a game, two touchdowns and a quarter a game. So, like I said, not worried about Brady.
Yeah, so to that point, I think Matt and I are sort of in the same line of thinking. Why would I think that there's a seismic shift? So now they're going to grind it out and they're going to play the blunt role, and that goes to Gillislee, and it's a big part of their offense. I think that's where I fundamentally had disagreed with Michael Salfino's point. I don't think it's necessarily a fundamental part of their offense moving forward that they're just going to – obviously they'll grind out the clock in those situations that they need to, but, I mean, how many – you know, is that 30 extra yards a game for Gillislee? Is it many more touchdowns? Probably not. You know, they're going to be in the flow of the game until the middle of the fourth quarter for most of the time. And that has historically relied on Brady's arm. So I just don't think that while there was a big shift last year from 2015 to 2016, I'm not betting that 2016 is the way they're going to play offense in 2017 fundamentally. Does that make sense?
Sure. I think that's Bill Hicks changes up from year to year. He's not worried about making anybody happy. He's worried about winning football games. All he cares about. You know, and this is why he's game plan specific. If the game plan that week calls for Gillislee, yes. If not, no. He'll go with one of the other guys. That's the worry with Belichick, is that he's not afraid to make a player unhappy if he gives him a better chance to win that Sunday.
Well, George, back to McCoy real quick. He played his two seasons in Buffalo. He played 12 games in 15 games. That's pretty good.
Yeah, right. But still, you know, he's going to miss games. It's a matter of when does he miss those games? He can be very frustrating.
All right, I'll talk a little bit more running backs before the end of the hour, and then we're going to move on to baseball in the next hour. Mike and George back to close out the first hour in the Roto Experts of the Morning. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Closing out the first hour, closing out football. We're going to talk baseball in the second hour. We've got Roger Mooney coming up from the Tampa Bay Times. We're going to talk some Rays with him. Talk about the Rays All-Stars. We've got Corey Dickerson in there. Logan Morrison. Did Colome make that All-Star team? I got to double-check that. I think he did. But we'll double-check that.
Don't care.
Well, we're talking to the Rays beat writer coming up, so I want to do a little bit of homework, but Logan Morrison, are you mad about Logan Morrison's Gary Sanchez comments, George? The whole TMZ drama that baseball became this week with all that?
Who cares? I mean, I guess he's got a point. How do you look at it? Should it be the players who had the most home runs this year? Should it be the players who had the most home runs over the past year since the last home run derby? Should it be the players who are going to bring the most eyeballs to the set that people want to watch? Sorry, Logan, nobody wants to watch you. All right, yeah. No one's interested in Logan Morrison. I'm not saying people are interested really in Gary Sanchez either, but no one wants to see Logan Morrison. What I did like is that all of a sudden players want to play hitting this, right? There's just so many players usually turn it down. So I like the fact, I do like the fact that he wanted to participate. But also, why is he yelling at Sanchez? Sanchez had nothing to do with himself being picked. This is all the league. Go yell at the league.
Yeah. Harper and Votto, I think, said no. But, you know, we got some stars here. We got Stanton and Judge and Sanchez and a whole bunch of other guys. So
I wish Gallo would have said yes. I would have liked to see Joey Gallo than Sanchez.
I get it, though. You convinced me last week when we were talking about this. I get it. He's got to feel weird.
I get it, too. It'd be embarrassing. He's batting, what, 175, whatever. It'd be silly. But still, he was invited. And, I think sometimes you have to realize, yes, you're not an all-star. You're just going to the home run hitting contest, and the fans want to see you.
Yeah.
And we do.
Sure.
You know, we want to see him see how far you can hit the ball. That's what you do well, right? So at least give us what we want. Lord knows you provide plenty of free air conditioning during the regular season. So at least, let's see how far you can hit a ball. It would have been fun to have Gallo there, Stanton there, Judge there. Yeah, but let's face it, this is all about Stanton and Judge, and it'll be disappointing if at least one of them doesn't get to the finals.
Yeah, so I looked up some stats during the show since we talked about it at the top of the hour on first downs and first down percentage. So Mike Evans had 81 first downs. That's the most. This is receiving first downs, so I'll look up rushing another time. But Mike Evans had 81 first downs on his 96 receptions. That was a first down percentage of 84.4%, by far the highest amongst these elite wide receivers. Going down from there, T.Y. Hilton, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Michael Thomas, Jordy Nelson, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, DeAndre Hopkins there, dude, despite how bad their offense was. DeAndre Hopkins had a pretty high percentage of his catches go for first downs. Michael Crabtree and Travis Kelce, Julian Edelman, Greg Olsen, that's like your top 13, and even Pierre Garçon in there, top 14 players. So a lot of those names towards the top of your list, George, I don't think it's any surprise, but keep in mind in that league setup that you mentioned, it's going to be an extra 81 points for somebody like Mike Evans, so it's going to matter.
I think Camp Bay's off. The passing offense is there for Tampa Bay. DeSean Jackson will open things up. Satan's got to play off the line of scrimmage, play over the top of Jackson, should open it up over the middle for Evans. You got the two very good tight ends now, O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, like that. Running game is still a little iffy, but I think Jacquees Wright will do fine for the first four games. Then we'll see after that with when Martin comes back. But I like this passing offense. I think they're going to put points on the board.
There's a lot of players and teams that we tend to talk about. We fall into the trap that many of our other experts are talking about, and I get scared when people are talking about Bilal Powell and Isaiah Crowell so much. I'm not scared about people talking about the Tampa offense. I think it's all set up for Jameis, and I think they should be legit this year, right?
Yeah, it is. I think Jameis is a top 10 fantasy quarterback.
I'm with you. Going to talk baseball in the second hour. Roger Mooney coming up from the Tampa Bay Times back after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George. Here to take you over the next hour, Roger Mooney from the Tampa Bay Times. Coming up, hit him up on Twitter at Roger Mooney 50. That's MOONEY. So, George, last night around MLB, obviously a lot of action yesterday, it being a Saturday. Had some walk-offs, including what we mentioned with Clint Frazier yesterday. Cody Bellinger's a little bit less exciting. He drew a bases-loaded walk for a walk-off, but a couple of young guys getting the walk-off hits.
Yeah, Frazier's was a line shot into the left center field bleachers. Good for him. Good for the Yankees. A game they probably didn't deserve to win. They were flat again. But Frazier actually had a home run, triple, single. They were actually being no hit for five or six innings by Brent Suter, a guy who never reached 90 miles per hour on a pitch yesterday. Kind of sad.
That's tough. It's not where you want to be, but Yankees really needed that one yesterday, and they steal one. You know, game they probably got outplayed, but such is life in baseball, right?
It happens, right? It's 162 games. You're going to have games like this. Yankees are still in trouble because, let's face it, they got to get a win today. They're going against Nelson. They have best pitch for Milwaukee. After the break, four games against Boston. And that they'll get the Boston's top four pitchers, Price, Porcello, Pomeranz, and Sale in some order. I think Boston might save Sale until Sunday. I believe Sunday's a doubleheader in Fenway. Don't see that very often.
No, you do not. So just looking at some other games, you actually mentioned Wade Miley yesterday, and Wade Miley gets a win. Actually pitches a fairly solid game. We beat up on the Orioles pitching.
Hell has frozen over.
I figure we give him a little bit of props. Now, he only goes 5 2/3. He threw 107 pitches, but mixed up 8 hits and 3 walks to produce only 1 run. So there were plenty of base runners to go around, but his ERA dips below 5 finally.
Woohoo! The whip is 1.75.
That is unbelievable.
Ouch! 1.75. I mean, that's crazy. That's all I need to say. But the Baltimore pitching staff, when Wade Miley is still one of your starters, enough said.
Very true. And we're going to talk Rays Red Sox next with Roger Mooney after the break. And they get a big outing yesterday, George, out of Alex Cobb. He goes 7 2/3 and shut down the Sox, who they win the game 1-0. Colome with his 24th save.
Yeah, Colome, Cobb pitched great. Yeah, Cobb's been a little bit up and down, probably a little bit more up than down, but that's I don't think it's so unexpected coming back from the injury, although he did come back for a bit last year. So good to see that. I wonder, we'll discuss this with Mr. Mooney coming up next. You know, the Rays have to treat their team differently than most. You know, they need to trade guys earlier. Is Cobb on the block? What about Archer? You know, I understand the Rays are in it. I think they're in a wild card spot right now. But they have to act differently than other teams. They need to trade these guys while their value is at its highest. I wonder what moves the Rays might be in line for come the trade deadline.
We'll see. So we will be back with Roger Mooney to ask him some of these questions. See if he's got any plans for the All-Star break. Maybe he gets to shut it down for a couple of days. It's Mike and George back with Roger Mooney from the Tampa Bay Times after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're here till 10 after our show. It's going to be Tony Cicada and Matt Modica on Fantasy Football Gold. And then we're going to move over to Al Melchior from FanRag Fantasy Baseball from 1 to 3. And then the producers from 3 to 5. And coming in, joining us now from the Tampa Bay Times, Roger Mooney. Catch him on Twitter at RogerMooney50. Roger, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, George and I were talking right before the break. Another nice, you know, it's been a little bit of an up and down season, as George was saying, for Alex Cobb. But he spins a gem yesterday, a really nice win as we're heading into the All-Star break for the Rays. And I don't know if this was your expectation for them, but maybe 6 weeks ago people are talking about them selling, but here they find themselves, they're in a wild card spot right now, and it's maybe a different outlook than some people anticipated for them.
Oh, absolutely, and I think the proof in that was late June when they traded for Hegavaria, the shortstop from the Marlins. I mean, they went out and got a shortstop, and they have Matt Duffy, who, you know, we're led to believe it's going to return at some point this year, but they went out and upgraded at shortstop. So you're looking at a team that thinks that they have a chance to compete, and obviously, you know, you hear the word mediocre used a lot with a lot of the American League teams. There's a lot of mediocre teams this year, so everybody's still in contention, and that's where they fall. So I thought this would be a year where they'd be much like they played last year. They'd be a sub 500 team and they'd be dumping a lot of guys at the trade deadline. But now, you know, upgrading at shortstop and possibly going after a relief pitcher, I think these guys are going to be as all in as they can, you know, to make a run at a postseason spot.
Roger, normally the Rays have to, since being a small market team, they handle things a little differently. We've heard rumors that they could trade Archer, Cobb, Odorizzi. Do you think they'll be – they added Hecheverio, got a sort of gift from Miami there. Do you think they'll be – add more pieces, or will they have to go the other direction and trade assets while their value may be at its highest?
Well, that's a good question, because Cobb's a free agent after this year. They only have Logan Morrison signed through this year. I'm sure there's a team out there that could use a first baseman. He's got 24 home runs through the first half of the season. I think, you know, playoff-bound teams or teams looking to get there wouldn't mind having Alex Cobb in their rotation or Chris Archer. But, you know, they really want to get back to the playoffs. They want to get back there and prove that it wasn't just Joe Maddon that got into the playoffs. So if they were to make the postseason this year, that they would – any team would consider that a huge, a huge accomplishment. But even more so for these guys, I don't know. They do need some help for the bullpen, and when they traded Fetcher Varea, they looking to upgrade at other positions. So that kind of leads you to believe that they're still chasing an arm for the bullpen. I don't know who they'd be able to get and what they'd have to give up for them, but I think that this team might actually be adding some guys. At the trade deadline, which is really rare for them.
I mean, I think that's good news, personally. Again, we're with Roger Mooney from the Tampa Bay Times. Catch him on Twitter at RogerMooney50. So I think that's good news. George and I have talked a lot earlier this year about Tampa, about Kansas City, and even Pittsburgh to some extent, about how they have to build a little bit differently. And I'm more excited about Tampa and Kansas City being in the mix as opposed to having to disassemble this team all over again. Even, frankly, if in the long term it may not be best, I like the fact that they're able to battle for it right now. But you mentioned Logan Morrison. Obviously, he's having a great season. And then you have Corey Dickerson, who is one of only four players ever to start an All-Star game for the Rays. So I guess I would lay this out to you. And then Alex Colomé's had a great season as well. Who are you most surprised is having the level of success that they're having this season for the Rays?
Well, those are certainly three good candidates. I thought Dickerson would have a better year. Like, he was kind of hurt last year. So, and then, coming to the American League, leaving Colorado, playing in the American League East. So there's a lot of things he was dealing with last year that you figured he wouldn't be dealing with this year. So I thought he would have a better season. I didn't see him leading the league in hitting like he was at one point, and doing as well as he did when they had him hitting leadoff. I didn't kind of expect that. But I think Logan Morrison probably a little bit more, and not just what he's given him offensively. He's played really well defensively. You know, that was kind of like the knock on him when they got him last year, that when they let James Loney go, that they were kind of going away from having that gold glove caliber, really tight infield defense that they prided themselves on, especially with – they've always had really good fielding first basemen. And when they got Morrison, they thought they were going away. But this year, he's been great defensively. And for a team that prides itself on defense and uses defense, they do to give them an edge against other teams, having a first baseman like him is just huge. And he's really impressed me more defensively than offensively, which is saying a lot. He's just having a really good offensive year.
Roger, what about Jacob Farias? Has come on. He's sort of taken the league by storm here. Had out-dueled Chris Sale the other night. What can we expect from him in the second half?
Well, you keep expecting him to have that rookie start, where he just goes out and gets lit up, and he doesn't. And there's been a couple of his starts, he'll have a rough inning, and you think, okay, here it goes. Look who's coming up. The meat of the order's coming up, and they're gonna do to him what these guys do to rookie pitchers. And next thing you know, they're in the dugout. He's gotten through it. I was talking to a couple of scouts on Friday because he pitched Thursday, and they were just gushing over him. They just love the fact that he just attacks hitters, and he doesn't dilly dally up there. He's not trying to get him to chase pitches. He's not trying to get umpires to give him that outside strike or low strike or anything. He's going right after everybody. He's been a great surprise because everybody's looking at Blake Snell as he was going to be the big rookie, and then they got this Brett Honeywell guy down there at Triple A who's supposed to be like the next big guy to come through. And Faria is just kind of just another good arm that they have, but he's been the best pitcher on this rotation since he's gotten here.
Chris Archer, he's in the All-Star game. I think we all had a good level of expectations for him. You don't even really need to belabor the point about how good his stuff is, right? But maybe the ERA is a little higher than some of us would like in the fantasy community. But how would you assess his personal performance? All-Star game designation is one thing, but how would how do you think he would assess his performance to this point in the season? Is he happy with the way he's bounced back, or does he feel like he still needs to sharpen some things up to be the true ace of this staff moving forward?
Yeah, we were talking to him yesterday, actually, about some of that stuff. And, you know, he's one of these guys who's always going to tell you that, you know, there's room for improvement. And there is, because he's had some games where he, you know, just expect him to pitch a lot better, especially against the lineup he's going up against, and it's just not there. He wants to obviously improve those things. You know, he's talking about the more you're in the league, the more you learn. You know, you think that it would be the more you're in, the less you learn, but he's finding out that, like, what every veteran told him when he first came up, that you're always learning in this game. So he wants to get a lot better. He lost 19 games last year, and I know, you know, a lot of those losses weren't necessarily because he pitched bad, but, you know, when your record has a dash 19 at the end of it, it certainly gets your attention. And he's hell-bent going into this year to prove that he's way better than a 19-loss pitcher. So there are things he can do. It'll be interesting to see him today because the spotlight will be on him. He'll be going to the All-Star game, but he's pitching against David Price, who, you know, who's his mentor, his teacher. He called him yesterday. He was the father of the pitching staff with James Shields, the grandfather, when he was coming up. So he wants to be that guy from Shields to Price to him. He wants to continue that legacy of great Rays pitching. And sometimes when he gets into games like that, that's when he's not at his best. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that today. I think if he pitches very well today, it could show another step that he's taken toward being one of those elite pitchers.
Brad Miller's had a disappointing first half of injuries. He's back now. What can we expect from him in the second half?
That's a good question, because he wasn't really happy about being moved to second base. And now that he's healthy and he's back at playing second base, he's going to be sharing a position with Tim Beckham, who's also not happy about being moved to second base. But they got a lot of unhappy second basemen on the team right now. He's actually looked well. I mean, two games, but he's been getting on base a lot since being activated the other day. So maybe it's a case where he gave him 30 home runs last year. Obviously, he's not going to do that this year. But if he can be somewhat productive going forward, that offense is going to look pretty good. But, you know, I think maybe it's just time he just realizes, look, I'm the second baseman, and I got to play well to stay in the lineup. So maybe it's time to just, you know, put hurt feelings aside and just start playing as best as he can. And I think we'll probably see a little bit more of that.
That's good stuff. Thanks, Roger. He's the Pro Sports Beat backup writer for the Tampa Bay Times. He follows the Rays and obviously gave us a lot of great information. Roger, hopefully you get a chance to relax for a couple of days during the All-Star break like some of the players do. But thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to him again soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll talk to Roger again soon. We'll be back to talk more baseball after the break. We'll give out our All-Star apologies. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. If you're not listening to us on the app, you should be. As Nando Duno says, don't be a weirdo. Stop streaming it online through the mobile site. Just download the app. It's free. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app in iTunes Store on Google Play and listen to it for free anytime, anywhere. You listen to us talking to Roger Mooney. You can listen to Fantasy Football Gold, which comes up at 10. That's 10-1 with Tony Cincotta and Matt Modica. Maybe I'll call into that show and clarify what I was trying to talk to Modica about on Twitter. Not really, but I
actually
could.
Call it and just make it all confusing. Just throw them both off.
Yeah. Well, Tony, no, because then Tony will keep me on the line for 15 minutes and it'll make me say something over the line. And I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to stress out the rest of my Sunday. Anyway, you can also listen to Al Melchior of FanRag Fantasy Baseball on the app from 1 to 3, and then our very own Pete Considori and Kevin Walsh, his buddy, are going to be on the producers from 3 to 5. So, Pete, what do you got lined up for today, bud?
We have a couple of things. We're going to be talking about the NBA free agency. We're going to be talking about how our 4th of July's went, because, you know, why not? We'll get to some NHL talk. I really want to go in depth with the Rangers a little bit more about their centerman issue. Just a lot of much more stuff. We're going to go into fantasy baseball as well, how our fantasy baseball teams are doing, who produced for us this week, who were not so great. So it should be a great show. 3 to 5 today.
All right. Looking forward to it. And, by the way, speaking of NBA free agency, James Harden had a really good day yesterday, George. I don't know if you saw that. I know you're not a big NBA guy, but I don't know if you saw that headline and how much he's going to get paid.
It sounded like, a one-year $80 million contract.
It's 4 years, $228 million.
That was close.
A lot of money.
That is AAV.
I think that's like the max that he could get. So there's some – there's some flexibility in there, but I believe it's 4 years, $228 million. And this is after, just a year after he signed a deal with Adidas that is rumored to be in the $200 million range. So in the last 12 months, James Harden has really upped his net worth. But good for him. What are you going to do? People get freaked out about the NBA contracts. It is what it is. You know, there's only 15 guys on a roster. 14, some instances, basically 15 guys on a roster. The TV deals are what they are. So the average annual salaries are out of control. But it's only going to get bigger over time. So people just got to get used to it.
Yes, they do. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm replying back to Matt Modica and his, on his Buffalo Bills here. I agree with Matt. Matt's saying that the running game will come down a little bit, but the passing game should increase. That's the NFL as a whole, pretty much. Yeah. And I would agree there. Although, I mean, Sammy Watkins, man, it's a when does he get her hurt? And Zay Jones, you and I play in that Dynasty League. Now, we're not in the same conference, so you and I are not drafting against each other. And I'm praying. I have the 12th, 15th, 16th, 17th. It's a 16-team league. I have picks 12, 15, 16, 17. Really hoping Zay Jones gets to me.
I think you'll get him. I was doing this the other day, like a couple of days ago. I was looking because I pick 11th, and I'm trying to figure out what I can do because I don't think I'm going to get one of the running backs that I want. Those guys are going to fly off the boards as they usually do. So I'm going to be debating between somebody like Zay Jones and I think a linebacker. Like Jared Davis from the Lions really kind of intrigues me as a long-term play. Do I need to take a linebacker there? Not necessarily, but you know, the building block of this whole dynasty team for me, and it's a league in which I've done pretty well, was Luke Kuechly, frankly. I picked him as a rookie, you know, 6 years ago, whatever it was. He was probably my fifth pick, and he's been, like, in that league, those guys are really valuable. It's not that you can't get other linebackers, but when you have one of those elite guys, they're adding 250, 300 points to your total by year's end. So it becomes really important. Does that kind of make sense? Me looking for a replacement for, like, David Harris at the decline of his career?
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year, that's how I rebuilt my team. I wasn't a beer rebuilding mode. I made the finals last year. I lost in the finals. Boo-hoo. But it's an IDP league, and I rebuilt it by, I think, using – I had 3 second-round picks. I believe I used all three to rebuild my defense. I think I took defensive tackles, defensive ends. That's how I rebuilt it. I got Joey Bosa was one of the guys I took, and he certainly helped there having a big season.
Yeah.
So, and I'll be doing the same thing this year. I think with that 12th pick, I'm leaning towards the best offensive player. I need help at wide receiver. But 15, 16, 17, there'll be at least one IDP there. I might get the top IDP. Depends how the draft goes. And I might take 2 IDPs. Depends on what I need there. It's all about need. This league is closer to what a real league is like. You're not just taking offensive players. You got to take secondary. You're not going to take that young or not that early. It's just not as important even in an IDP. But defensive linemen are weighted heavily in this league. So if you get a top one, it's tough to pass it up. So I might have to go in that direction. Linebackers are always valuable. Might go in that direction. I need my tackles. I need my points. As I always like to say, Mike, I don't care where my points come from as long as I get them.
Yeah, so I think linebacker is a need for me. Running back, you know, this Gillisley thing can really, like, turn my team around. Like, if Gillisley is a home run, I just have him sitting there. He's really going to make up for more what I might lose with Ingram. So that would really help me a lot. Wide receiver, I think I'm pretty good. I got Baldwin and Crabtree and Pryor. That's like my top three. So, I may actually go wide receiver there to build it out. But we'll see. You know, leagues like that are so deep. You got 16 teams that you're drafting into, and it's only rookies. And I assure you, these running backs and wide receivers fly off the board. So all the names that we talk about are the rookies that you want, impact rookies. Those guys fly off the board. Whether he has a career like Brashad Perriman or he has a career like Amari Cooper, those guys go early. Kevin White, I remember, went really early in that draft a couple of years ago, and
top
he
four.
Hasn't produced anything to date. So back to the topic at hand. Let's see if Mike Cardano actually responded. No, he did not respond yet. I wanted to see what place he is in.
Maybe that's because he's not in third anymore.
maybe. But, you know, I'll give him a chance to answer. So what I really wanted to look at, George, is there a player out there, the all-star apologies, a player that you totally doubted, and now the guy is just tearing it up? Like, we talked about a guy like Corey Dickerson, and we talked about a guy like Logan Morrison just recently with Roger Mooney on air. Maybe you had different expectations for those guys. But is there anybody out there that's really been a huge asset this year that you're like, yeah, you know what, I totally doubted this guy, and he's proved me wrong?
I mean, nobody truly comes to mind. A player you totally doubted at draft time, I'd have to look up. I'll look up some drafts to see if a player I disliked. The players you mentioned, Morrison, Dickerson, certainly didn't have big expectations for them. Didn't see what they're doing, but I didn't trash them either. So I don't think they quite apply here. There are always players that we don't like for one reason or another. I didn't see Aaron Judge doing what he's doing now. You know, and the big numbers he's putting up. I don't have Judge on any of my teams. And believe me, I wish that wasn't the case now. But no, I don't. No player comes to mind that I would need to apologize, that I was wrong about, that wrong about. I'm sure there are players. I just can't think of one offhand.
I think Zach Greinke is probably a guy that we owe a little bit of apologies.
Okay, Greinke could be one.
We did doubt a little bit that he would come back off of his season last year and turn it around, but he's got his 11th win on Friday night, I believe it was, and here he is, all-star per usual. So I'll throw my first one out to Zach Greinke. By the way, I'm glad that I have Aaron Judge on my team. So I'll give Zach Greinke the first nod as an all-star apology. Beyond that, I clearly – you talked a lot, and I'm not picking on you because I was probably in line with you on
this.
Sure
you are.
We talked a lot about how the Reds would stink, and there were clearly no expectations.
Forget the Reds. How about the
for
Brewers?
Zach Cozart. The Brewers, too. But Zach Cozart, a guy that I guarantee the fantasy community didn't have much to say about Zach Cozart at all, and here he is. He's going to start the All-Star game.
Yeah, but that's not an apology. We didn't say anything negative. We didn't say anything about him. They got
that's even
they
worse.
Mention of them.
That's
no,
even
no,
worse. It's better to hate somebody than be indifferent towards him.
I don't feel bad about that. I'm not apologizing for that. No one saw that. I'll apologize for Greinke. I was definitely off on him. That's a good one to bring up. I'm looking at some ADPs now to see if anybody
McCutcheon.
Else that I disliked. No, I was on board with McCutcheon. I've got him in several leagues. I actually not that I saw him coming back to prominence, but I thought he'd be better. I thought his draft value was great. You know, so that's somebody who I was on board with.
How about the other side? How about the other side of things? You
guy I like that Crater.
Yes. Yes.
Let's see here. Machado. I mean, although he's starting to turn it around now, certainly liked him.
Well,
let's
everybody liked
happening.
Machado. It's a first round pick. Like, I'm not going to apologize for that.
I'm not going to say somebody I liked
analyst.
In the 12th round who cratered. Who cares? It's got to be early
I'm just
picks.
Saying. You know, yeah, I suppose, but how are we going to – I'd like to apologize to myself for drafting Machado because I could have had Harper, and I went with Machado. You said yourself, though, you would have picked Machado. What am I going to do? Like, the guy's hitting .228. It's not my fault. At least the power numbers are there on some level, and you can only hope he turns it around. So, yeah, let me ask you this, since we talked about
Machado. How about Danny Salazar? Oops.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's right. You were at the Carrasco-Salazar situation.
Yeah, I went to Salazar.
You were out on Carrasco.
Had the injuries. Yep, out on Carrasco and in on Salazar. May have had that backwards.
So there's an apology. So George would formally apologize for the Carlos Carrasco, Danny Salazar. I'm trying to think of a way to clean this up. Let's just call it a disaster. So it is what it is. What is one guy? Oh, I did want to ask you a question because you brought up Machado and Judge. A lot of analytics would tell you that Judge is likely to fall off in the second half, and maybe some similar analytics would tell you that Machado can turn it around. Do you expect those guys to go in opposite directions after the All-Star break?
Not if Judge keeps watching the zone. I mean, his batting eye has improved dramatically. Struck out twice yesterday. It's because the umpires keep treating him like he's Jose Altuve. And what I mean by that is, do they realize he's 6'8 and not 5'6? I mean, they really have to adjust their strike zones there. They're calling the low strike on him more than any other player you've seen right now. That can't keep happening. But I think Judge will calm down, yes. But no, he won't fall off the planet, no.
All right. Quez-Tech. More evidence for Quez-Tech. George will go on a 15, George will go on a 15-minute thing about Quez-Tech after the break. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. By the way, I didn't talk about the exclusive Edge draft package earlier when we were talking football. You really should check in and get yourself the exclusive Edge draft package. We got George talking about running back rundowns, new faces, new places. George's rankings are in there, not to mention Jake Seeley's rankings, Scott Engel's rankings. You have tons of good content in there from Chris Ventra, Mike Waterloo, myself. And who else? Brandon Murchison's probably in there. Mike Florio, Frank Stamfel, all kinds of different articles. Tim McCullough, all kinds of different articles to help you through your draft process. You get some pretty good deals right now. I'll see. There might be a free radio discount to be had there. So I'll make sure to tweet that out to get you the details on the rest of the exclusive Edge draft package. But needless to say, it's one of the better values you're going to get to help you through your draft. It's worth every penny. So that being said, and you can also get the in-season exclusive Edge MLB package, or George still writing articles for that. Closer Report, Who's Hot, Who's Not, which we actually didn't talk about today because we're giving out our all-star apologies as we enter today as the last day of the first half of the MLB season. So we talked about some guys that would you apologize to Mike Cardano for yelling at him about John Segura, who I know has missed some time with injury, but has been really good. And I know you're going to talk about the reasoning as to why you yelled at him, but Segura's been good and returned value on that. Well, I guess it was a fourth round
pick. He actually hasn't returned value. Yeah.
You don't think?
He's missed a lot of time. That's hard to return that value, and he's not stealing bases like we needed him to do.
It's a fair point.
I traded for him in a league. That was the ironic part. I actually the trade was good, but he's got 9 stolen bases. His value is in the stolen bases. I mean, I think 6 home runs. That's about what we thought. We thought he'd hit the home runs would come down because he's playing in Safeco. Average is fantastic. And yeah, we expect the average to be good. Certainly not 355 good. So that's where his value is. But this is what we were worried about. I think this is exactly what I stated. In the American League, Seattle, he may not run. They're not a running team. They don't want him to get thrown out. Because, once again, his ratio is even worse than last year. 9 stolen bases, 16 attempts. I mean, he's almost 50-50. They're not going to let you run. They're not going to let him run in front of Cano, in front of Cruz, or in front of Seager if he can't be successful at least 70 to 80% of the time, and he's not even close. So that's the problem with Seager. You know, the power's down, 29 ribbies. He's scoring runs, which we expected, but he's not even on a great pace for runs, 41. And that's not even going to get you 100, which is shocking. Granted, the injuries play a toll there. It's the average right now that really helped you with 355, but we knew that would be a plus anyway. We just didn't expect it to be this big a plus. So I'd argue very much that he's not returning value.
Okay. George is light on apologies today, which I kind of like, you know. It makes for a good show. So
I apologized a couple of times.
Yeah. The Carrasco thing. Yeah, that's a rough one. So, in any event, we were talking a little bit during the break about Jose Ramirez and how great he's been. And we were just kind of looking back as what his ADP is. And he's outshined his ADP. His ADP, I mean, he had multi-position eligibility. His average pick was, according to this, 95th overall. So, 12-team league, you're looking at...
8th round.
8th round, yeah. So, but he's been fantastic, right? 329 average right now, 16 homers, 46 ribbies, yeah, and 10 stolen
10
bases.
10 stolen bases. He can be a fantasy MVP.
Yeah, yeah, he's that type of guy for sure. Him, Aaron Judge, other guys that you got a little bit later that have produced a lot. But it had me looking over at third base in general. And granted, these are guys that may not be playing every day at third base, but have third base eligibility. And I'm just looking down the list of guys. Nolan Arenado, obviously having a really good season per usual. Chris Bryant. The homers are there. The average is down a little bit, but you probably have confidence in Chris Bryant going into the second half, don't you?
Why is anybody down on Bryant? He's had 18 home runs, got 38 RBIs. That sucks. All right, yeah, you like to see that. Hard. He's got 18 home runs. His average is down a little bit, but it wasn't like you were expecting his average to be, you know, to raise your team. Batted 292 last year. You're probably hoping in the 280s this year. It's down a little bit. It's the RBIs. That's the problem there. I mean, really, 38? Really? I mean, that has to be lifted up there. But other than that, he's had a fine season. I think he's getting too much grief. He's not having an MVP season. He's just having a good season.
Yeah,
I mean,
Manny Machado.
I think it's a little silly.
Yeah. You know, Manny Machado, the next guy on the list, he has the same homers as Bryant and actually has more RBIs, despite the fact that he's hitting 228. I got some offers for Machado at various points during the first half. I didn't even budge because the offers weren't good enough. I'm just going to ride it out. I think that's really the best thing you can do unless you're in a keeper type of league and you feel like you got to break it up to get multiple parts long term. I think Machado is a guy that you just have to expect his average could creep up a little bit. It's just going to be lower on this year than you expected, right?
Oh, I agree. Like I said, I have no problem trading anybody if the trade is right. Trade's good. Trade makes sense. I am not selling low on Machado. I think he'll be fine. I don't know what was going on in the first half with him. You know, you watch some of these games, and he was swinging at pitches like, what are you doing? Are you just completely guessing? You know, you're guessing fastball, you're getting the curve, or vice versa, because he looked terrible. But he seems to be hitting better of late. Maybe whatever was bothering him was over. Maybe it was the Pedroia thing and the slide and those other garbage that was happening, whatever it is. So hopefully that picks up here. But the biggest disappointment at third base is yet to come.
Josh Donaldson.
There you go.
It's obviously the guy that George was referencing. Injuries played a role, but he sits here at the All-Star break, 9 homers, 25 RBIs. He is hitting .252. So clearly not the former MVP numbers that we are accustomed to seeing.
And we probably should have seen this coming. I think most of us did. Once again, you talk about an injury that didn't heal during the offseason. You know, the offseason, you got November, December, January, February. You got 4 months, and it didn't heal. What makes anyone think it was going to heal when he took that month off during the regular season? You know, this is something that's nagging. It's whatever it is. They don't seem to think it's really all that serious, but it's not going away. He's back again. He's hitting a little bit better right now, but, you know, not great. They benched him a couple of times as well. He's got, you mentioned, 9 home runs, 25 ribbies. He's not a stolen base guy anyway, but generally he steals 6-7 bases. He's got one. Average is down to .252. He's not helping you anywhere right now. Forget MVP. He's fantasy LVP.
I have to concur. I really would. Some other guys on this list, just going down the ADPs. Kyle Seager was really the fifth third baseman off the board. He's got 10 homers, 47 RBIs, .250, George. Nothing really eyebrow raising about those numbers at all. I would call them disappointing, but they're not dreadful, I guess, is
no,
the one thing I would say.
But he's down across the board. I mean, once again, we're a little bit past the halfway mark, so you almost just double all the numbers here, and you're getting somewhat accurate, maybe take away a little bit. The average is down. You know, 250 is not terrible, but we thought he'd bat 270, 265 at least, so it's down a little bit. Once again, not a stolen base guy. We don't care there. The RBIs is fine. You know, he's a little off, but it's not terrible. 10 home runs, though. I mean, he's on pace for, 19-20, hit 30 last year, 26 the year before, 25 the year before that. So that's off. That's off almost
especially
20,
this year.
20-25%. So that's, yeah, I guess I get where you're going there, where everybody else hitting home runs and Seager's not. So that's certainly a concern there. The numbers aren't there. But then again, you didn't draft him to be a great player. You drafted him to be a good player. And right now he's a tick or two below that. A strong second half could build us up. I still have some faith in Seager. But that being said, I'm not thrilled with what's happening here.
Yeah, you know, the reason I'm focusing on third base is we talked a lot this year about how deep the position was early, and you could conceivably wait on a third baseman. And what's interesting is some of the guys at the top of the ADPs have been disappointing. But as you go down through, and I'm just talking about guys that have eligibility. Miguel Sano, he's in the home run derby. He's got 21 homers, hitting .279 with 62 ribbies. Jake Lamb, 20 homers, 67 ribbies, hitting .281, even throw in 4 stolen bases. Justin Turner just made the All-Star team. Obviously, he dealt with injuries, but he's hitting .375. Anthony Rendon, 16 homers, 52 ribbies, .300. I mean, he was a little bit higher up on as far as ADPs are concerned. But it is interesting that even Mike Moustakas, George, 25 homers at the break. There were some guys lower. So I think in some sense we were right that the position was deep, but unfortunately – if you put a priority on it by taking one of those top players, your season might have been turned upside down, at least at that one position.
It's funny how when you look at things, you know, oh, what if I would have made this move over that move? You know, yeah. When you go, you look at your draft, the guys who went right before you, right after you. Imagine, I didn't take Aaron Judge in any league. Odds are, if I did, I'd be in much better shape. You know, what if I didn't reverse Carrasco and Salazar? What if I had Carrasco ahead of Salazar? And I have Salazar in a couple of leagues. You know, injuries, you know, the one league I have Trout in. Yeah, that worked out real well for me. Thanks, Mike. Finally get Trout, and I don't even, doesn't even pay off. You know, we can all play the what-if game. It happens in every league. It's fun to look at. Actually, it's not fun. You know what? Because it's maddening. Because you don't look at the good things. When you play the what-if game, you only look at the bad. That's all we ever look at because we're negative people. We don't look at the good stuff that went our way. Only the bad.
Yeah. Ryan Healy, 19 homers. Todd Frazier, still hitting .215, but at least he's got the 16 homers, George. At least he's provided some pop.
Yeah, I'm fine with Ryan Healy. I mean, once again, he's doing what you expect him to do. We didn't expect him to be a superstar. And if you did, you were probably mistaken there. So I have no issues with Healy. I wanted the power. If you grant him, a corner infielder, probably not a third baseman for you. So well, I think he's been fine.
And Matt Davidson is probably the last guy I'd focus on. Yeah, Matt Davidson from the Chicago White Sox has third base position eligibility. He's got 18 homers on the season and 42 ribbies. So a few names that guys with third base eligibility. As we said, there was some depth at that position. You know, unfortunately, guys like Beltre were on the shelf and Donaldson were on the shelf, and those numbers were taken away from us. But maybe they can make it up in the second half. But, hell, if you have Mike Moustakas, George, you got to be feeling great about it. Who's better than you?
Yeah, Moustakas has been fantastic. Good for him. It's Royals, man. 2 weeks ago, they're selling. Now they're going to be buying.
I know. I'd be rooting for them if I wasn't rooting for the Yankees. George and I back to close out the show after the break. George and I back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're closing out the show before we hand it over to Tony Cincotta and Matt Modica on this very channel. They'll be doing Fantasy Football Gold, which will be the case until football season. So they'll then hand it off to Al Melchior, FanRank Fantasy Baseball, and the producers. But Matt and Tony coming up. So here we are scheduled today. George, we got, as you said, Jimmy Nelson goes against Tanaka. Pretty good matchup. David Price against Chris Archer. Jameson Taillon against John Lester. We got who else here? Oh, Danny Duffy goes up against Clayton Kershaw, and I got Danny Duffy today, and I'm just kind of worried about it in general. I don't expect him to get a W, but I'm more worried about, like, I don't want him to get beat up, and then I have, like, ill feelings about Danny Duffy going into the break. He came back quicker than I expected, which is a good thing from the injury.
I'm probably starting Duffy today. He did come back a little early. Pitched well the other day. Dodgers don't do a pitch well against lefties. I understand there's not much upside here because I agree with the odds are you're not going to get a W going up against Kershaw. So that can be a problem there. But I think his peripherals will be good enough where I'll start him anyway.
Okay. So I promised George during the break that I was going to ask him a really...
Oh, yes. Please. I just can't
just,
wait.
A trivia question. Promised me. You're the best. It's just not totally... unfair, but it is what it is, so he's got to deal with it. So Corey Dickerson will be the fourth Rays player to start an All-Star game. Who were the previous three?
Okay, Longoria.
To start Longoria, that's one, yes.
Okay, so I got two left. God, have they had two more good players? How about Carl Crawford?
That is right. That's all two. Right, so, the third one should not be that hard. High-profile player.
Second base, shortstop. Do they have a good shortstop? Third, no. Catcher,
no. Nope, keep
probably
going.
An outfielder.
Maybe not.
DH?
Maybe not. Corey Dickerson's DH, so that helps there.
First
maybe
base?
Somebody that throws the ball a lot.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about pitcher because they don't get elected. They get chosen. David Price.
There you go. Boom. Nailed it. George on fire. to close out the show. Nice work. I know you don't normally like my trivia questions, but I give you a lot of credit there. I'll make no apologies to you, all-star apologies, because the question, despite the question being tough, you should have gotten it. So to close out the show, I thought I got some really nice insight from Roger Mooney regarding the Rays. Obviously, you got some good pitching matchups today. Now, you asked me about your all-star game thing. You're going to have it on in the background, or you pay attention somewhat like I will?
Well, Tuesday night I got the show with Joe Pisapia and I think Matt Modica and/or Tony Sincott are fantasy football black book. So it'll be on in the background. Yes, obviously I can't have the sound on, but it'll be on while I do the show. Absolutely, but I don't care. I mean, I'm a Yankee fan, so I want the American League to win, but I don't care. This is a tough week for me, Mike. I mean, there's no games now after today for 4 days. You know, I'll be a little edgy come Wednesday. Like, I need a lineup to set. Need something to do. You know, you still got time to wait. But I'll watch the game a little bit. But like I said, win or lose, doesn't bother me.
Yeah, so home run derby is tomorrow night. Obviously, you got the All-Star game on Tuesday. But for those of you that want to play DFS, you got some crazy pitching matchups today, including some guys that are not eligible for the All-Star game because they're throwing today. Kluber and Kershaw, Fulmer.
Why not make the
Archer.
All-Star game on Wednesday? Wouldn't that solve this problem? They can pitch an inning then? I mean, 2 days rest?
This is not a nimble organization in Major League Baseball. So you're asking for a lot of concessions. Well, that's where we're going to close out the show. Me bashing Major League Baseball. Thanks, folks, for listening. We'll talk to you on Saturday. Mike and George from the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're out.